You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
American 11, are you trying to call?
The doctor is not answering their phone. Our number one has been stabbed, and our five has been stabbed.
Hey, I'm going to call from Washington. I am in a situation where American 11 is a possible hijack.
What's going on, Betty? The crap is erratic again. Problems are erratic. Betty, talk to me. Betty, are you there? Betty? Betty? A plane just hit the World Trade Center.
What?
The 737?
It what?
Like the World Trade
Center. Who are you talking to?
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
September the 11th, 2001. A series of four coordinated terrorist attacks against our nation carried out by the militant Islamist terrorist group Al-Qaeda. You remember where you were that morning, don't you? I know I was home, didn't even have the TV on. One of my daughters called and said, Dad, a plane hit the World Trade Center. I said, okay, thanks for telling me. So I go to turn on the TV, and I'm thinking, what kind of weather could they have in New York City that a plane did that, or did the pilot have a heart attack or something? And I see the first tower on fire, and I'm thinking, what happened? The sky is totally blue. There's no reason. And then the second plane shows up. That first plane hitting the target was American Airlines Flight 11. And you heard in that opening piece a crew member for American Airlines trying to talk to their stewardess, Betty Ong, who had called in, said, I think we got a hijacking on the way. And then she kept trying to raise her. They'd already hit the building. She didn't have, there was no more response. Flight 11 into the North Tower of the World Trade Center, 8:46 a.m. Eastern Time. 17 minutes later, 9:03, the South Tower, hit by United Airlines Flight 175. And then, of course, within an hour, both buildings would collapse. But before they collapsed, there were numerous calls to 9/11 from inside the World Trade Center. And these calls that were coming in, these were people that they needed somebody to come help them, and they maybe thought they were going to get out. Now, they had no idea what they were dealing with. Some of them did. Some of them realized a plane is hit. And some of those on those planes in those final moments were able to make phone calls to some of their friends or relatives. And it's worth us hearing those messages again, too. They're very personable, and yet at the same time, they represent America facing a horrific event. And to keep in mind, some of those in those buildings were making their way down the stairways. Others were told to stay where you are. Don't try to go anywhere. We'll come get you. And then when you see those towers collapse, keep in mind there were people dying at that point as those buildings went down. And, of course, we had another terrorist plane go into the Pentagon, another one go down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, as they tried to overtake the hijackers. But as I said, those inside World Trade Center, after the first plane hit, then the second one, they were calling for help.
I come to two World Trade Center, right? Maybe the speed is in the back, and we're not ready to die, but it's getting bad.
Oh,
No,
say your
prayers. I'm going to die.
Ma'am, say your prayers.
God.
We're going to think positive because you got to help each other get off the floor.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
If you have mold in your home, your family can get very sick. You need to call Wellington Environmental. Realtors, even hospitals and doctors call Wellington to solve mold issues. A Belleville homeowner discovered mold. Good thing he called Wellington. The mold is gone, and Wellington's new chemical process saved him $3,500. A university was facing some major mold issues. They called Wellington. Issue solved. The university saved $40,000. Wellington also helps research and test new products to deal with mold. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the BBB, Missouri and Illinois. Say you heard about Wellington on Larry Connors USA. Save $100 on any mold treatment or $50 on mold sampling. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
What are those people going to do? All the elevators are blocked out.
Oh, my God. So both towers are now...
Okay, Larry. I got an aircraft 6 miles east of the White House.
Crystal City, just north of Crystal City.
Just to the north of your town.
Yeah, stop all departures.
Pentagon just got hit. Don't put me in that. God damn, I can't protect one from the NCA.
A lot of the sound pieces we're using come from various sources. I can't identify each of them, but some are from the networks. CBS, NBC, ABC, some from documentaries by the History Channel, some by Oprah Winfrey's production channel. But in each case, we put them together in a way to help tell a story going forward. And that was a collection of just of the chaos that was going on, which is understandable. Especially for those who were in New York. And then those air controllers, additional chaos. And, of course, a lot of the attention was in New York because it is New York City. And those 110-story towers are, you know, it's very visible from anywhere around the region of that New York area. But you cannot forget, I do not want you to forget, that American Airlines Flight 77 out of Dulles, hijacked over Ohio, and at 9:37, it crashed into the west side of the Pentagon, the headquarters, obviously, of the American military, causing a partial collapse on one side and deaths. And then there was a United Airlines Flight 93 flying in the direction of D.C. But by now, word had gotten out. Either folks had gotten calls or notices from other people. They were on the ground and calling their friends or relatives they knew that might be on this United Flight 93, telling them what had happened. And they realized, we're not going where we should be going. Somebody's inside. We got to go out there and we got to take control. One of them being Todd Beamer. And later you're going to hear from the airline attendant that talked to his wife after she had also been on the phone previously with Todd at that moment. As he's trying to explain what was going on, she relayed it in a very calm and fashion to Beamer's wife long after the incident itself. They believe that plane, the target was either going to be the U.S. Capitol or the White House. And, of course, a lot of the TV stations in New York City, I mean, it's, you know, that it's just another morning. They're doing their various news reports and some fun interviews and laughing and talking about the weather. I mean, that's the greatest thing that might be bothering, and people had to make plans for that weekend, the weather, you know, whatever was going to, they wanted to do. And that's all they were doing is standard reporting. And then this began to break in front of them, and they also, understandably, were confused and chaotic.
Oh, my God. Another plane has just hit. It hit another building. Flew right into the middle of it. Explosion. My God, it's right in the middle of the building.
This one into the East Tower.
Yes. Yes. Right in the middle of the building.
It does not appear that there's any kind of an effort up there yet. Now, remember, oh, my God.
That looks like a second plane.
I did not see a plane go in. That just exploded.
We just saw another plane coming in from the side.
You did. That was out of my
Yes, and that's the second explosion. You could see the plane.
Jim Friedel in Hoboken said it appeared to bank sharply and smash directly, perhaps purposefully, into... Oh, my goodness.
Oh, God.
There's another one.
Oh,
my goodness. There's another
this
one.
This seems to be on purpose.
Oh, my goodness.
Another
now you...
plane?
Now it's obvious, I think, that there's a second plane just crashed into the World Trade Center. I think we have a terrorist act.
I mean, do you know if there were many people in the building?
Oh, another one just hit. Something else just hit. A very large plane just flew directly over my building, and there's been another collision. Can you see it? I
yes.
can see it on the shot.
Oh, my.
Something else has
you
just
hit. You know what? We just saw
like
a plane circling the building.
Between the deaths in the World Trade Center and the plane going to the Pentagon, and the plane going down in Pennsylvania, we're talking about 3,000 Americans. And it could have been much higher. The World Trade Center normally has, between the two buildings, they normally have 50 to 60,000 people in them. And yes, it was a terrorist attack. Everybody began to realize that. The attacks apparently conceived by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who first presented to Osama bin Laden in 1996. Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, and appeared to transition, having just relocated back to Afghanistan from Sudan. Bin Laden provided leadership, financial support, and originally he, while he did orchestrate, he initially denied involvement, but later recanted. Because he wanted to be prideful in saying that we did it and we will do it again. He said, we're free. You undermine our security, we undermine yours. President Bush was in a school in Florida, an elementary school. He was talking to a bunch of second graders and reading to them and just kind of, you know, It's a great time. You know how excited those kids had to be and their parents that they were going to get to meet the president that day. His chief of staff, Andrew Card, of course, was with him. And Card later explained how the events were unfolding.
Before the president walked into that classroom of second graders at the Emma E. Booker School in Sarasota, Florida, he had been told, and I was standing right beside him when he was told this, it appears a small twin-engine prop plane crashed into one of the towers at the World Trade Center in New York City. That's what I knew he knew when he walked into the classroom. After he walked into the classroom and I was still left in the holding room, the door shut, and the director of the White House Situation Room, a Navy captain at the time, Deb Lauer, came up to me and said, sir, it appears it was not a small twin-engine prop plane, it was a commercial jetliner. And then a nanosecond later, she came up and told me, oh my gosh, another plane hit the other tower at the World Trade Center. That's when I contemplated my responsibilities as chief of staff. And the test was, does the president need to know? The answer is yes. No, obvious yes.
An obvious yes, White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card, but how does he approach the president? How does he do it, especially in the midst of a class full of second graders? Because numerous cameras were there that day, network cameras as well. Here's what he did.
I made a decision to pass on two facts, make one editorial comment. I thought about what I would say. I knew that I couldn't expect the president to have a dialogue with me because he was sitting in front of a press pool in front of these second graders. And I did think about the words that I would use. I'm not sure that I knew enough to think to use 11 words. It just turns out it was 11 words. I opened the door, the classroom went in, and when it was appropriate, when the president was not participating in a dialogue with those young students, I walked up to him and leaned over and said, a second plane hit the second tower. America is under attack.
It was very clear America was under attack at that point. Now, there were those who were saying that, well, Bush was solely terrified. He didn't know what to do. Well, the president had to decide, and later admitted in a later thing, he couldn't panic in front of these kids. He had to just sit there and listen. And then meanwhile, the security staff is saying, what are we going to do? Can we get him back in Air Force One? Should we go to air? Should we go somewhere in a bunker? We're down in Florida. What are we going to do next? All those planning things were having to go on while he was sitting there contemplating and trying to not panic anyone else. And, of course, in the meantime, the situation was unfolding in New York City in the World Trade Center. One fireman was one of many with a story of a miracle.
As we got into the South Tower, a woman came to us yelling and screaming, there are people trapped in the elevator. And they were screaming and yelling, not just because they had just fallen 70 floors, free fall 70 floors, but the elevator pit below them was on fire with jet fuel, and they were right above it. So they were getting burned, and they were trapped. Tower 2 collapsed onto the Marriott Hotel, and the Marriott Hotel collapsed around us. Pitch black, you couldn't breathe. The dust was so thick, it was caked in my ears and in my mouth, and I was trying to breathe. And I was on my hands and knees, and I was crawling back toward the door I had come in at Liberty Street. But the building was collapsed, and it was just piles and piles of steel and rubble and glass. I could not believe that for a second that I was still alive. But I wanted to get out of there as fast as I could. I wanted to save my own life so that I could help others. And I came across a metal roll-down gate, and I put my fingers under it to raise the gate up. And I lifted it up an inch or two, and all these fingers came from the other side of the gate. And together we lifted the metal gate up, and we escaped.
They were able to escape. But higher up, especially if you were above where the planes had crashed into the towers, you were dealing with smoke and heat and fire. And then some were making the decision to not die by fire. They were jumping.
I try not to think about the choices that Kage had up there. There were over 200 people who jumped to their death. And I don't know if Kagai was one of those people or not. My gut tells me he probably was, because that was something that he could control.
Talk about a relative of his that got lost or killed in the World Trade Center. Yes, as many of those were choosing to make their own decision as opposed to wait. And, of course, the other thing is no one could predict the towers were actually going to collapse. I'm driving into the station after I've initially heard the reports about it. I'm listening to a radio report, and I hear the reporter say, the tower collapsed, it collapsed, it collapsed. I'm thinking, I was so angry. A reporter was over-sensationalizing a story that's already sensational. When you say collapse, you mean the whole thing came down. That's not what you meant. I arrived at the station and walked in, and I was livid. And as I looked up at the TV screen, the second tower collapsed. He described it exactly as it took place. And for anyone who witnessed it or was there, nearby, heard about, memories are seared into your mind.
You have this momentary feeling of finalness, okay? Like, this is it. Then you have that secondary feeling of, no, I got to keep moving. We have no clue what's going on here. Let's keep going. The uniforms that were there were just screaming at us, run, 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 don't stop, don't stop. And we got across the street from the building in front of St. Paul's Chapel. And we look back and you see this unbelievable ticker tape of concrete, steel, and bodies. Right at that point was when we heard what was the clearly the twisting steel, the crumbling concrete of what once was the South Tower, the building that we were in, the first building to go down. It was unbelievable. You hear this and you knew what it was, and you hear the cries of hundreds of thousands of people in the streets of New York all screaming the same blood-curdling scream at the same time. It's what I hear first thing in the morning and last thing at night virtually every day.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
The cockpit's not answering. Somebody's stabbed in business class. And I think there's mates that we can't breathe. I don't know. I think we're getting hijacked.
That was Betty Ong. That's the first indication many knew that something was going wrong on that particular flight. She was on the back of American Airlines Flight 11 using an airphone talking to ground control for some of her, for her company. You can hear she's very calm and businesslike as she was describing what's going on. I said, I think the cockpit's not answering. Somebody stabbed. 45 years of age. She was actually not supposed to even be on the flight, but she wanted to take that flight. She wanted to work an extra shift bound for L.A. out of Boston's Logan Airport. She wanted to go because she's going to meet her sister Kathy for a vacation in Hawaii. That is why she was on that plane. But because of that phone call, we realized the terrorists had critically wounded a couple of flight attendants, Karen Martin, Bobby Arcegil, slit the throat of a business class passenger, jammed their way into the cockpit, killed the co-pilots, took control of the plane. That again being Flight 11. You have to keep in mind that when those planes were hitting the World Trade Center, there was not going to be much opportunity for survival. Certainly on those on the plane were not. And then if you were in the building, you just prayed to God it was not going to come into your building. The attacks resulting in something like 2,977 fatalities, 25,000 injuries. And, of course, we've had numerous people die since then. And when we look at what happened on that day, and we try to remember, did we do everything we could have? We realized we had a lot of gaps. There was a call also from the chief hijacker. He was talking and trying to talk to people on the plane, but also would open up a mic where he's talking to air control, and they were trying to respond. What are you saying?
Is that America 11 trying to call?
Buddy. We have some planes, just stay quiet and you'll be okay. We're returning to the airport.
And who's trying to call me here? American 11, are you trying to call?
Nobody moves. Everything will be okay. If you try to make any move, you'll danger yourself and the airplane. Just stay quiet.
Just stay quiet. So he's talking to them as well. Well, on September 11th, 2001 at 8:45 on that clear Tuesday morning, an American Airlines Boeing 767, 20,000 gallons of fuel, crashed into the North Tower of the World Trade Center, 80th floor of that 110-story skyscraper, instantly killing hundreds, of course, trapping hundreds above in higher floors. Television cameras immediately began recording, going live also from various networks in New York City. What a freak accident. How'd that happen? And then 18 minutes after that first plane, a second Boeing 767, United Flight 175, appeared out of the sky, sharply banked toward the World Trade Center, crashing into the south floor near the 60th floor. Fire departments were responding, obviously, after the first, and they had to deal with confusion at their end as well. They still were not sure. Firefighters arriving weren't sure. We're going to spend more time on that before we wrap up this hour. But the New York City Fire Department dispatched 200 units, half of the department going into the World Trade Center. And, of course, numerous off-duty firefighters and other emergency medical technicians, off-duty police officers. They didn't have to go there, but they did. They could see it. It was a tragedy of epic proportions. They wanted to go and see, what can I do to help? Many of them ended up being among the victims. And then there's some cases that maybe they got someone out, but they didn't live to tell about it, and the person that got helped out, maybe they didn't survive either when it's all said and done. And, of course, air controllers talking to the flights best they could.
Hey, can you look out your window right now?
Yeah.
Can you see God about 4,000 feet about 5 east of your pole right now? Looks like he's...
Yeah, I see him.
You see God? Look, is he descending through the building also?
He's descending really quick, too, yeah.
Well, that's...
2,500 feet now. He just dropped 800 feet in like one sweep.
That's another situation. What kind of airplane is that? Can you guys tell?
I don't know. I'll read it out in a minute. Another one just hit the building.
Wow. Another one just hit the World Trade.
The whole building just came apart.
Oh, holy smokes.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Jules, this is Ryan. Listen, on an airplane that's been hijacked, if things don't go well, and it's not good news, I just want you to know I absolutely love you. I want you to do good. I'm so happy this time. Same to my parents and everybody. And I just totally love you, and I'll
see you
later. Bye, babe.
Tuesday, 9:47 a.m.
Hi, baby. Baby, you have to listen to me carefully. I'm on a plane. It's been hijacked. I'm on the plane. I'm calling from the plane. I want to tell you I love you. Please tell my children that I love them very much. And I'm so sorry, babe. I hope to be able to see your face again, baby. I love you.
Bye. Sean, it's me. I just want to let you know I love you, and I'm stuck in this building in New York. There's lots of smoke, and I just wanted you to know that I love you always.
Give me a moment. Those are last calls that some of those on the planes that down either fate are uncertain, but didn't seem great at that point. Messages left on voice machines because they weren't able to reach the person they were trying to. I can't imagine coming home and picking up a recorded message and hearing something like that. Maybe not even being aware of anything else that had happened at that time. Some of them sounded very strong and brave, didn't they? They were. There was another one on board one of the flights. It was United Flight 93. And on board was an American by the name of Todd Beamer. He had called in and was talking to an operator who took the final call from that flight. She later did an interview with CBS. Her name is Lisa Jefferson. relating the conversation she had with Todd Beamer and then at a later point meeting Todd's wife.
When I took the call over, there was a soft-spoken, calm gentleman on the other end. He told me that there's three people that have taken over the flight. At that point, I asked him his name. He told me Todd Beamer. He was from Cranberry, New Jersey.
Did you make a conscious decision not to tell Todd about the World Trade Center? Why?
Yes. Because I wanted him to have hope. I wanted him to think that he still had a chance. I didn't want him to feel like it was just totally hopeless and he definitely didn't have a choice and he knew he was going to die. I didn't want him to have that feeling.
When he wanted to pray, was your sense then that he knew that...
Yes, I did. I felt that he knew at that time because he had said, "Oh, Jesus, help us." And then he said, "Lisa, would you recite the Lord's Prayer with me?" And I knew that he knew at that time that it wasn't much left for him to do.
What do you think that this country needs to know about the men and women who were on board Flight 93?
They're all heroes in my eyes. They really are. They all pitched together, and they did what they thought was the best thing to do at that time. And I feel that Todd played a great role in that because when he told the guys, "Are you ready?" I assumed that they were waiting on his cue. Then they responded to him, and he said, "Okay, let's roll."
And would you please help me welcome his wife, Lisa Beamer, here tonight?
She called me this Saturday morning. I told her, I said, "You have two boys, David and Andrew?" She said, "Yes, yes, I do." I said, "You're expecting your third child?" She said, "Yes, he told you all of that." I said, "Yes, he did. And he wanted me to let you know that he loved you and his family very much." And I gave her a message and kept my promise.
Again, that's Lisa Jefferson, who was an operator taking the final call from United Flight 93, talking with Todd Beamer. Then you heard President Bush introduce his widow to a joint session of Congress. Beamer and the others on board who joined him were breaking into the cockpit, trying to get control of it. Get control of the plane because while they may or may not have known about World Trade Center, they could clearly tell the plane was being hijacked, and it did not appear it was going to be a survivable thing if they allowed it to just continue. And it, no one knows for sure the target. It might have been the White House. It might have been Congress. But they broke in and got control of the plane, and then either one of them are in the process of trying to get control or one of the hijackers on board purposely aimed it into the ground, and it went in and crashing. But they were doing what they could at that time. The story of, like, a Todd Beamer and others that were involved, you wouldn't know except that he was able to get that call out. And then it was so great that Lisa Jefferson was, as she said, "I kept my promise to tell his wife everything he wanted me to say to her." Somehow during the struggle, at some point, that Boeing 757 went down near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, killing everyone. But again, if the hijackers had intended to hit the U.S. Capitol or the White House, that didn't happen. Back to New York City. A fireman, John Morgan, inside the World Trade Center's, another miracle story.
Somebody told me that what happened to you, some people think, could be a miracle.
I believe that to be true myself. I was right in the middle of the Trade Center when the building was collapsing, and I survived, so...
That sounds incredible right there.
I think, you know, there's probably 1,000 firemen that have similar stories to what happened to them that day. Mine's just one of them. I pulled out my fire truck. I was the chauffeur, the driver that day. When I got out onto the apparatus floor, I realized we were already running over bodies in the street. People had been blown out from the Trade Center. I don't know if they were from the plane or if they had been from the building, but their bodies were on the
street. You couldn't see them. The smoke was that thick.
The smoke and debris and everything was falling from the sky, and people were cowering on the floor. There were already people that were burned and bleeding in front of the fires that were getting hit with debris falling. So in my mind, this was unbelievable. It was surreal. What was going on over here? I had no idea what could possibly be happening. It never occurred to me that it might have been a commercial airplane.
No one knew at that time, and there's Freeman Morgan, John Morgan, doing what he can at that point to see how he can get in and help make things happen. And, of course, all the firemen arriving weren't sure of what they were going to face.
By the time I had gotten into the Trade Center, my company was already up on the upper floors. I knew I wouldn't be able to catch up with them, and I knew that if there was any kind of trouble that they would come looking for me, so that I decided to stay in the lobby so that they wouldn't come searching for me and I would put their lives at risk. So now I'm in the lobby of the World Trade Center, and believe it or not, in the lobby there already were burnt bodies from the jet fuel. I didn't know this at the time because, again, I still didn't know it was a commercial airplane.
Were these people run down or they'd fallen?
These people were in the lobby waiting for the elevators to go to the upper floors. The jet fuel from the plane came down into the lobby, and when the elevator doors opened up, they were immediately hit with a fireball. They were incinerated. So there were bodies all over the floor. And again, I'm looking around. I'm like, God, you know, what could be going on here? This is unbelievable. There was no fire when we pulled in. There was water on the floor from the sprinkler system being set off, and there was broken glass on the floor, and there were bodies on the floor. So immediately we went to the people that were on the floor. There was a gentleman pushed up against the wall. He was burned. He was already dead. There was a woman. She sat up, and she was trying to speak to me. Her voice, her throat had closed up. It had swollen closed. And she sat up, and she was trying to get the words, and I said, stay calm. We'll get you out of here. She was nude. Her clothes had burnt off. Her fingertips were gone. They were burned. Her throat had closed up. She laid down, and she died right there in front of me.
And another thing he could do about that. President Bush addressed the nation that night, acknowledging what we all knew at that point. When we close out this hour, when we come back, you're going to hear from the president and some of the remarks he made. And you have to keep in mind that that time, the whole nation was in shock. People were going to churches that they hadn't gone to before, going to their parishes, their synagogue. President Bush adding his remarks for the nation.
These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve. America was targeted for attack because we're the brightest beacon for freedom and opportunity in the world, and no one will keep that light from shining.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. The victims were in airplanes or in their offices. Secretaries, businessmen and women, military and federal workers, moms and dads, friends and neighbors. Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, despicable acts of terror. The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger.
And we also, as of that day, shut down all air traffic. The U.S. and Canada shutting down all air traffic for civilian, that'd be commercial, until September 13th. And it was strange. Did not see a plane in the sky. I was invited to, and I was honored to take part in a special memorial held out to Forest Park with representatives of various faiths offering their words, their prayers. And then in the process, while I was making some remarks, I looked up and there was a plane in the sky. And I said, it's good to see us back like this. But I do know that for a long time, many of us, especially if you lived, well, wherever you were, especially near a big city, if you saw a plane in the sky, you began to hesitate. And a lot of people wouldn't fly for a while. The 9/11 date, we were told later that, you know, there are a lot of ways to look at 9/11 being a 911 call, you know, for an emergency. But apparently, according to one of those investigating it, he said they had chosen the date, and I know this could sound convoluted if you're not in a mindset for it. The King of Poland and the Grand Duke of Lithuania began a battle that turned back the Ottoman Empire's Muslim armies that were at that time attempting to capture Vienna, I should say, September 11, 1683. During that time, Vienna was a seat of the Holy Roman Empire and the Habsburg Monarchy, both major powers in Europe at the time. And for Osama bin Laden, that was a date that the West, the Western world, the infidels, gained some dominance over Islam. And supposedly, in his mind, by attacking on that date, he hoped to make a step in Islam, winning the war for a worldwide power and influence. As I said in the beginning, he actually denied having anything to do with it. But then later it became clear that he did, and he admitted so. Then we started, of course, looking for him. He was never formally indicted, but he was on our most wanted list for the bombings, along with other cases. 10-year manhunt. Then President Obama gave the authorization once our special ops forces had decided they had contacted and knew where he was, and he gave them the authority to move forward. And now we all know that Navy SEAL Team 6 did so on May 1, 2011. They also had to take biometrics to prove that it was Osama bin Laden. But that was going to come 10 years after the attack itself. You go back to the night 9/11, 2001, and words from President Bush.
This is a day when all Americans from every walk of life unite in our resolve for justice and peace. America has stood down enemies before, and we will do so this time. None of us will ever forget this day, yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just in our world. Tonight I ask for your prayers for all those who grieve, for the children whose worlds have been shattered, for all whose sense of safety and security has been threatened. And I pray they will be comforted by a power greater than any of us, spoken through the ages in Psalm 23. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me.
And there's another passage from the Bible I often rely upon for friends who've lost close ones. That may God grant you the peace that surpasses all human understanding. And that's what we needed at that point, because no one could understand what had happened. How do you deal with it? How do you move forward? Well, as a nation, we did. But then many who watched that, they had also lived through Pearl Harbor. This was a modern-day Pearl Harbor for the nation. And it was on our shores directly. Pearl Harbor was obviously our shores as well, but this was right at the heart of our institution, business empire. And it did disrupt the economy for a period of time. But American flags were popping up everywhere. People were praising and shouting and yelling and USA, USA, USA. And remember our pledge, one nation under God.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.